to discuss the real issues affecting the Tasman nations, this is Trans Tasman Talk, jointly produced by the Unshackled.net and RightMinds.nz. Now, here's Tim Wilms in Australia and Dewa De Boer in New Zealand.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Trad Tasman Talk on this Friday, the 16th of July. It is 6 p.m. here in yet again lockdown Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here in free Auckland, as long as you don't get shot while, in a gang shootout while, driving down the street. Pretty safe to be here. I was gonna tell you this in the pre-show as well. It was on the route that I cycle to work. There was some kind of shootout between police and somebody who stole a car, and so the entire street, which is one of the main corridors that connects South Auckland to the rest of North and East Auckland, was just completely locked down. But I managed to get back through about three or four police checkpoints on my bike. In the evening, the shootout was in the morning at about 10 a.m. and the police were still standing around doing some kind of investigation at 6 p.m. But I managed to convince them to let me through on my bike, so that was nice. So I got to use the roads without any cars being there. Just had to dodge all the different police vehicles.
All in the day in the world's most livable city.
That's right, for sure it is. So anyway, that's it. It's lockdown number five for you guys, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it basically happens once a month now. That time of the month, it's time for another circuit breaker lockdown, because I'll get into the COVID update. So you and I haven't done a show in 3 weeks, and a lot has happened in that 3 weeks. Of course, a fortnight ago, debuted Trad Tasman Talk with myself and Stephen Berry of the Mr. Berry channel, because it's from now on, it's going to be alternating between you and I co-hosting and he and I co-hosting. There wasn't a show last week, decided to take a bit of a breather. I saw you.
A breather. I had a non COVID illness, and the whole family has had that. And this was one of the things that is running rampant in New Zealand. We have a real pandemic on our hands in New Zealand at the moment, a respiratory virus that is not the Wuhan flu, not of Wuhan origin. This one actually comes from Australia. They reckon the cases have shot up as soon as they started the Trans-Tasman bubble. What happened is that we had zero cases of RSV last year because of the lockdown. So this year they say that it's double the number of children in hospital, in ICU. Starship, which is the children's hospital in Auckland, is overflowing. They're actually sending children through to Middlemore and Auckland hospitals. And they've got dozens of children in ICU throughout the country at the moment, or at least over the last few days. A 63-year-old woman in Auckland died, and there are, I believe now, a few thousand cases of this virus that mostly affects children, which is probably why there's no lockdown. And you can see in this article Tim's got up, they're now calling for a vaccine for RSV. We've got to have the vaccine for RSV because...
Back in about 50, 60 years ago, there was a treatment for RSV. Have kids play in the dirt and mud to build up the immune system, because this virus, it's actually taken off in Melbourne as well, because we were locked down for so long. The reason why it's spreading is because our immune system is so much weaker because of lockdowns, social distancing, and masks. I actually know a person who contracted RSV and has got what you'd call long RSV now, that they were just c- completely out of breath for several weeks, found it difficult to walk, and they're like, but I did all the things to prevent infection, wore a mask and social distance. Yeah, that was the
problem. Yes, but sadly, nobody is held to account. Again, there's no apologies. There's no
admission
that they were wrong. They're doubling down. Lockdown number 5 in Melbourne. Let's do this all over again. It's an evil thing. These children now are suffering. Right, there's children on respirators in Auckland Hospital and hospitals throughout the country because of lockdown.
And now the reason why we're in lockdown number 5 here in Melbourne is because the Greater Sydney Delta outbreak travelled south with a trio of dodgy removalists who tested positive, who they were on red zone permit, but they broke a lot of those.
I love the fact that you have red zones. Sounds like one of my favorite RTS games of all times, Command and Conquer. In the Tiberium series, you had blue zones and I believe yellow zones and red zones, and the red zones were unlivable, inhospitable wastelands. I guess kind of like Melbourne.
Well, as the Greater Sydney lockdown has shown, New South Wales for a long time was called the land of the free. Hashtag in Gladys we trust, and she said the system's in place to be able to weather whatever came our way, so we'd never have to go into lockdown again. Well,
that's the problem. You tell the elites and the globalist regime that you're never going to lock down again, and they will come for you. They will make you. They will lock you down. Yes, they will never go away. They will never stop.
So Greater Sydney is, it's just finishing up its third week of lockdown. You describe it as, say, stage 3.5, because they don't have to wear masks outside. There's no limit on exercise. The thing that's caused the most controversy is that the so-called non-essential retail is open, which includes like luxury retailers such as Gucci, which and places like IKEA, which are showing up on the exposure site list. Gladys said at a press conference today that we might have to go harder. It all originated, so we are told, by this unmasked, unvaccinated limo driver who was transporting international air crew who tested positive, June 16th, 1 month to the day. And it began in the eastern suburbs around Bondi. And then they discovered that it got into the ethnic areas in southwestern Sydney, centered on Fairfield. And that's when it gets into those areas where there's the language, cultural barriers, and families live on top of each other, then I pretty much knew that Sydney was screwed for a long time. The cases have been.
You also have the instance where people don't listen anymore. Right? You do lockdown. People say that they're compliant, but they're not compliant. And this is good. I think that's good that people are no longer compliant, and the powers will have to finally face the fact that people will not comply, even though they say that they'll comply. And when people are watching them, it'll look like they're complying, but they're not.
Well, that's why Gladys is saying the lockdown keeps needing to be extended because of a lack of compliance, and the New South Wales issuing over 100 fines every day. It's $1,000 for breaching the public health orders, $200 mask fine. They have every day at the press conference their deputy commissioner, Gary Warboys, who I refer to as PC Plod. Of course, we have Chief Wiggum here in Victoria, up in New South Wales. They have PC Plod.
Which one was the one? So I haven't seen the clip, but I don't know if you have it. The one about going shoe shopping is the one that I've heard about in New Zealand. Who was that?
I don't know. He was like an assistant commissioner who they were cracking down on non-essential shopping. And Gladys also, in the health orders, has said browsing is not permitted. So I don't know how you enforce that. If you look at an item in the store for longer than 5 seconds, do you have to make decide to make a purchase? And they occur, on the dot every day in New South Wales. Both the release of the daily cases, which were 97 today, and the press conference with Gladys Berejiklian, the Chief Health Officer, Dr. Kerry Chant, and of course the star of these press conferences, Brad Hazzard, nicknamed Health Hazard. So he was the minister who said, we've just got to accept this is the new world order. Right at the beginning of the pandemic, it was the New South Wales Health Department that let passengers disembark the Ruby Princess, which was linked to 28 deaths of people dying with COVID. He didn't lose his job over that. He's 69 years old, so he's getting on in years, and he's getting quite terse and grumpy with the press pack that's assembled. And I've put together the latest compilation of Brad Hazzard featuring Dr. Kerry Chant.
James.
Minister Hazzard, how damaging is it for the public's perception of the state government's vaccine rollout that New South Wales Health, your department, accidentally vaccinated about 160 Joey's boys, and how embarrassed are you?
What I find more embarrassing, James, is you would make that sort of question accusation against frontline health staff who work their butts off and who tomorrow will have achieved a million vaccinations into arms. You know what? The school intended it well, there was a mistake, and so what? It's happened. Out of a million vaccinations, move on. I know just this morning, talking with our Chief Health Officer and her advisors, I was informed that at least one scientific paper says that this particular variant is almost 1,000 times more infectious.
Sorry, I've just got something in my eye, and I shouldn't be using my mask for that, but sorry.
Just unpack that all there. Obviously,
I've got something in my eye.
Yeah, Brad Hazzard, he previously referred to as the race for vaccines, compared it to the Hunger Games. But his department, they were supposed to only vaccinate two St. Joseph's College boys. What are you doing?
I'm doing the thing they're doing in the clips. I just realized that if you're doing sign language, you don't have to wear a mask. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Apparently, the facial expressions are part of Auslan.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, I guess.
We've got plenty of the AstraZeneca vaccine, but not many Australians want that. So it's mainly the Pfizer vaccines, which there's a supply shortage of. Scott Morrison said the flood of Pfizer will start coming in next week. But given that there is such constraint on supply, now this elite boys' school, St. Joseph College on Sydney's North Shore, it was only supposed to be two boys in the year that were supposed to get the vaccine because they were Aboriginal and they're in a priority group. In error, the New South Wales Health Department, in conjunction with the school, vaccinated all 163 boys in that year level. You know, it happens.
That happens. But just an accident.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. This is an appropriate bit to enter to put in New Zealand's vaccine rollout update. I sent you the clip. Most people will probably already have seen it, but you've got to watch it at least a few times because it's quite funny. When Chris Hipkins was giving an update, he was asked about, getting to people who maybe wouldn't turn up to their vaccine appointments. And he gave a wonderful answer that was heard around the world because,
Early next year, we'll be in the phase of chasing up people who haven't come forward to get their vaccination or have missed their bookings and so on. So everyone will be able to get a vaccine between now and the end of the year. But of course, you know, and I want every New Zealander to come forward, but human behaviour suggests that there will be some people that we have to actually really go out and look for, and some of that may spill into next year. But our commitment is everyone will have the opportunity to get the vaccine by the end of the year. Everyone will, but I can't say that, you know, that we're not going to have some hesitant people or some people who just haven't come forward that we don't have to go out and find next year.
We will share with you the most up-to-date information daily. You can trust us as a source of that information. You can also trust the Director General of Health and the Ministry of Health. For that information, do feel free to visit at any time to clarify any rumour you may hear, covid19.govt.nz. Otherwise, dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth. We will provide information frequently. We will share everything we can, everything you else you see, a grain of salt. And so I really ask people to focus.
The most egregious example of that appears to be this text, which originated in Malaysia and has kind of has become a viral hoax in Australia and in New Zealand. How irresponsible is it the people that are sharing that news of a lockdown imminent in New Zealand?
Yeah, and look, that's the kind of thing that adds to the anxiety that people feel. So I continue to share the message. New Zealanders must prepare. But do not panic, prepare. And when you see those messages, remember that unless you hear it from us, it is not the truth. And I really ask people, just visit covid19.govt.nz. It has all of the up-to-date information. And we will continue to provide everything you need to know.
Now, thanks for including that second clip at the end there. And I believe that one was from last year, though. Somebody in the chat may know. I've seen it going around viral now.
Gladys Berejiklian recently say that our health department is the one source of truth. It would help both in New South Wales and Victoria if they didn't leak information in advance to the media, which filtered down before official announcements. That's when rumors circulate.
If you don't hear it here, it's not the truth. All right, that's it. That's all the updates you're going to get from me here in New Zealand. I think those two clips really speak for themselves. Just in terms of what they're trying to communicate.
Yeah, the irony of politicians saying we always tell the truth, and they both, Gladys Berejiklian and Dan Andrews, have been berating people who haven't been telling contact tracers the truth. And of course, the irony of these politicians who lie all the time, saying tell us the truth.
Certainly.
Yeah, Scott Morrison, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, he reaffirmed it today. Australia has a four-phase plan to fully reopen when our borders will be open and lockdowns won't be needed. We're still in the first phase, which is, well, the shit show that we're in.
That's right. Let's move on to some more uplifting topics, including an update on the turf war that we talked about 3 weeks ago, I believe. There had been a legal victory by the Speak Up for Women group, which is a radical feminist group that opposes sex self-selection and basically the ability to for men to just say that they're women and not actually have to require any evidence for that or back that up in any way. So they had to, councils have to allow them to use their venues. That was ruled by a court after one of these local councils tried to block them. And what we see here is that in Wellington, the government decided to, or the council decided to light up the venue in the colors of the transgender flag. And one of our moderators, Origin, had a wonderful response to that. In order to speak without sanction, one must do so under the flag of transgender imperialism. And I don't have the photos. I didn't send you the photos, but at the venue itself on the night, the place was surrounded by protesters with their transgender flags. So you had to pass through the lines of transgender imperialism before you were allowed to hear this radical feminist speech. And of course, these radical feminists are basically leftists, right? They're liberal, second to third wave feminists. If you take a look at their values page, if you've got that one, good. So these are their principles of the Speak Up for Women group. That they believe, one, that women are adult human females, girls are human female children. Yeah, that one's right. They want women to be free from violence, etc. That's right. They want women to be able to organize in safe, sex-segregated spaces. That's good, actually. I'm all for sex segregation. Number four, I think, is where you get into that territory of reproductive sovereignty, which I suspect is code for abortion. So they probably, I think it's fairly safe to say that they do support the murder of unborn children, which is a standard feminist belief, sadly. Number five, they say that women have the right to be free from commercial sexual exploitation. I don't think that they want to ban pornography or anything like that, but if they really did believe in that tenet, then they would, much stronger on that, but not really. And then if we move through to number seven, might as well skip ahead. They focus on lesbians there, and that's what they're worried about with the trans agenda, is of course that lesbians will be deleted, which has largely been the case. That's sort of their problem. They want to be lesbians, but lesbians are no longer allowed to exist. So they've figured out that the fourth and fifth wave feminists have no more place for lesbians, because if you're a lesbian, it means that you believe that women exist. But if gender is a social construct, then you can no longer have women. So this is just the revolution completing itself, a feminist revolution that started off by saying women are the same, can be the same as men. Women can vote like men. Women can work like men. Women can talk like men. Women can dress like men. The natural conclusion to that revolution is, of course, that what is true one way is true the other way. While women can be men can be women. There's no such thing as a woman. There's no such thing as a man. There's no point in any of these distinctions. And that is where the final phase of the revolution is now consuming what is left of the radical feminist movement. So I do believe they're going to lose. They have to lose, because like this, in this revolutionary cycle, those who start the revolution must be defeated and consumed by the revolution. So that's what we're seeing right now. And that's where this big trans turf war is taking place. And it will wrap up probably sometime this year in New Zealand with the pass of the sex self-selection bill that the Labour Party is going to be pushing through. Will allow people to even alter their birth certificates at will, which of course is a piece of government identification. So you can, the value of those is decreasing rapidly, which is not something I oppose, actually. In their purely materialist worldview, they don't have any defense against that. So they try and focus on science. But there's no, science doesn't matter anymore unless science is purely there to serve the purposes of the secular religion. So the only science that matters is the science that backs up the globalist agenda. And these radical feminists, the Speak Up for Women group, they don't have any defense. They have no religious foundation to stand on. And so they will be swept away with the tide.
Well, there's a local similar group that's been formed here in Australia, the Coalition for Biological Reality. But as is the case in New Zealand, the tide is against them. The Victorian government has already passed self-identification on birth certificates. You can change it every 6 months. every 12 months, as long as the gender identity is not obscene. Of course, earlier this year, the Victorian Parliament passed the conversion therapy ban bill. And this week, this was before the latest outbreak on Sunday. Dan Andrews opened up the LGBTQ Pride Centre, and to make sure that he and his health minister were able to stage a photogenic event, the largely Indigenous homeless camp was dismantled on the Saturday night beforehand. They washed down the street so the Premier wouldn't get his shoes dirty. the Port Phillip Council said they rejected any suggestion the group was moved on by them and the street was routinely cleaned. They said
routinely.
Which I guess this the fact that they hose down the footpath where these homeless Aborigines sleep so Dan could open up a Pride Centre, it means that in Victoria, in the intersectional hierarchy, LGBTQ people are still above Indigenous people.
Certainly, this is the top of their hierarchy, top of the pyramid, and the greatest, I guess, the priest class of the religion. And so this is why hosing down the streets, ceremonial cleansing of their new temple is very, very important. I don't know if you had this in Australia where they sort of covered up a few cases so that they could hold these Pride events. We had this in Auckland where the cabinet ministers knew about cases. They knew they were going to be doing a lockdown the next day, but they buried the data so that they could attend a Pride celebration. They could attend this important religious festival and then announce the lockdown later.
Well, the lockdown we had last month, well, it began at the end of May. The first cases of the outbreak were reported the day after the LGBTQ Pride Parade, which was held at St Kilda. And the first case of this outbreak was reported the day after this Pride Centre had opened. So,
yeah, you can connect the dots. Either the primary spread of COVID-19 is through sodomy, or maybe the government is covering up a few cases just to continue with the agenda.
And now you mentioned that Speak Up for Women, they now have the access to public libraries to hold their event.
Any council owned spaces. The only public libraries, I didn't pick this as an item for tonight. The only thing happening in public libraries and art centres are drag queen story hours. So that was another, sorry for the plane going overhead, a helicopter, actually, police helicopter. Don't worry, they're not coming for me this time.
Another criminal on the run.
That's right. This is just normal. Don't worry, it's South Auckland. So now the only things happening in public libraries and art centers are drag queens, but these are public speaking venues, so arenas and spaces that are intended to have 100 or a few hundred people in them, so that people can listen to a public speech.
Well, that's certainly not the case in Western Australian public venues. With the Australian Christian Lobby Director, Martin Niles, he's got this national tour called The Truth of It. He's managed to, despite the rolling lockdowns, he's finished the Queensland leg and wanted to, he's starting his Western Australian leg, but they were deplatformed by a government managed venue, the Albany Entertainment Centre. They were told that the venue cancelled the event, and they were told it was because the Australian Christian Lobby's views are not shared by the WA state government. Like that was the reason. And so this is another comment. It basically says, welcome to China, which the Western Australian government, they did apologise to China for hosting on a public facility, a Taiwanese group there. So
this is not surprising to see the government in Australia, so the Western Australian government do this. Denying venues to Christians is going to be part of the new normal. I'm absolutely sure of it. What's holding things up here in New Zealand is that we did have a successful lobbying against councils pulling venues. This started with Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux. So you've got, obviously, Lauren Southern is Australian now, so we can thank her for that. That we actually do have a kind of public, a right to public venues because of court action that came out of her visit. But our government, on the other hand, is attempting to deregister Family First as a charity. And Family First is sort of our equivalent of the Christian lobby. Yes. And the government is attempting to deregister them as a charity, taking them to the High Court over this. They have won previous cases. But the argument is that basically promoting traditional values, promoting family, promoting anything with a biblical basis is not conducive to the public good. That's their claim. So you are no longer part of the public good if you're a Christian.
So in Western Australia, where after the March day election, Mark McGowan's Labor government has absolute power in both the lower and upper house, you won't just be locked out of WA if there's a COVID outbreak. If you if you don't share the government's values, you won't be allowed to host an event in one of their public facilities there. I'm sure that the Australian Christian Lobby, they'll explore legal avenues. They will not cop this from a government-owned venue. There's not much they can do if, say, like a hotel cancels on them. So I'll say watch this space. But yeah, it just shows that, well, Mark McGowan in many ways is saying to Dictator Dan, I can be a bigger dictator than you.
And you wouldn't put it past him to compete. I see Margot asking as well, saying that the Christian Lobby didn't come to Melbourne. Which could be the case. I'm not sure if they would fare very well in Melbourne at the moment, or if anybody would, but especially not Christians.
Well, they're probably hesitant given our reputation for rolling lockdowns. Though they have been letterboxing their pamphlets against the passing of the gay conversion bill. Mm-hmm. So they are doing some limited activities here, and they've also just the Christian various Christian lobby groups now they're deciding to, well, we should also reach out to the growing ethnic and also Muslim communities. Mm-hmm.
We'll see more of that in New Zealand as well. The growing Muslim population will be key.
And now
on that subject of hate speech laws in New Zealand as well, which is not a big update on that, but I have seen imams in New Zealand speaking out against the hate speech legislation because they are also worried that they're going to get in trouble. They're worried the Quran will become hate speech under New Zealand's hate speech legislation. So you will see interfaith. I mean, that's usually very liberal, but in the more conservative sense, you'll see more conservative religious elements working together as they are squeezed out of the public space.
Let's continue on with the crime update, which you alluded to throughout.
Sure, we can. We can, whether it's crime or not, we'll let you judge. The mongrel mob is where I should start. The mongrel mob has found a rather ingenious method of laundering money. So they had $3 million or they had $2 million, I believe, confiscated in a drug, in recent drug busts. This would have been a month ago now or 2 months ago. What has happened now is that a so-called former mongrel mob member is setting up a mental health rehab program that he's been running for a long time, although he does seem to keep getting convictions for things. And he got $2.75 million in funding for his program, which helps something like 30 or 40 people a year. And this funding runs for 5 years or something. It's an insane amount of money per person. This was signed off by Jacinda, as you can see on that headline there, and two other senior ministers had to sign off on this funding. This has caused quite a big outrage in New Zealand, and I'm surprised at all the things that didn't cause outrage, but this one certainly has. And this upstaged a previous mob outrage, because a few days earlier it had been announced that had been revealed via OIA that the Human Rights Commissioner had paid $200 taxpayer koha, which is a gift or a donation, to the mongrel mob when he gave a speech at one of their events several months ago. So taxpayers' money was being given as a gift to the mongrel mob. And then we get this story that they've actually been giving millions of dollars to fund drug rehab. But who's the number one cause of drug addiction in New Zealand? That's the mongrel mob, importing drugs, making drugs, selling drugs, pushing drugs, and they've managed to complete their integration into the system, where now they produce the drugs, they sell the drugs, and they get to do the rehab for the drugs as well, and they get paid the whole way through the process. That's a pretty mint system. And you can, interestingly enough, if you've got the next story there, I sent you another article where the police association is complaining that this is actually a money laundering system. So police association is finally upset at the growing threat of the gangs, even though the police association was largely, is despised, I should say, by firearms license holders and other citizens who it's basically ignored by promoting all of these terrible laws the government has pushed instead of going after criminals and gangs. And if you can play just a few seconds from this clip from Jacinda, it will be quite entertaining. She gets quite upset, just needs to play about 20 seconds of it.
Announced a bill to stop the government funding gangs. What do you make of that?
Look, if this is in reference to some discussion around a methamphetamine program that is currently being supported, that program is based on a program that has been around since 2000.
Can you stop out? I love the fact that she misspoke there and said that the government was funding a methamphetamine program rather than a... Oh, misspoke. So she was so flustered, she accidentally made the claim that they were spending millions of dollars funding methamphetamine directly.
And we'll stay with Jacinta for a moment because we've spoken a bit about the proposed Hollywood film about, based around her response to the Christchurch massacre, and the scripts leaked and it hasn't been received well.
No, so we made this joke last time, so 3 weeks ago. I believe somebody in the comments asked who's going to be playing Brenton Tarrant and how's re-record the shooting and follow the script. And we made that as a joke on the show 3 weeks ago. Now the script has been leaked and there is a full 17-minute reconstruction, including everybody getting shot, a full rerun of the banned footage in New Zealand will be reconstructed for this movie. One of the producers is actually the wife of Simon Wilson, who is a New Zealand Herald reporter. He's the biggest climate cultist for the New Zealand Herald, one of the biggest left-wing activists in media. And, they are somewhat silent and embarrassed about this because Being a movie in New Zealand, all movies get some form of government subsidy in New Zealand as well. So the government has already subsidized this film. And it's likely going to be pushed ahead because they were wanted for an American audience. They could probably make a good bit of money from it. The victims are obviously and rightly outraged about this, because if your family members were killed in a terrorist attack or any kind of massacre, you would not want that to be put to film and have people profit from that. It was then revealed that the script contains some interesting rewriting of history as well. So they wanted to make Jacinda look good. So they turned Simon Bridges into a villain, where he complains about, they give him several lines like, come for our guns, you might get bullets. If someone in that mosque had an AR-15, this would have been over in 5 seconds. Some good right-wing NRA lines that you might get from America, when in reality, Simon Bridges fully supported the legislation. The entire National Party fully supported the legislation. They then left out David Seymour completely and replaced him apparently with a kind of a Christian NRA figure. You might be able to scroll down a bit further. They've got some lines from him in there. Let's see. They've got some things about Winston. They've got some lines from Winston Peters in there as well. We won't go through all of this, but yeah, they do their best to invent history. And it's interesting to see a lot of outrage about this, but this is what Hollywood does with all of their history. Kieran's posted name there. Solomon, this guy's name is called Solomon, who leads the independent party. So they invent a guy and a party that he's in parliament and he's sort of the bad guy. And they, you know, Hollywood invents the fake history because if they make the movie and people watch the movie, that's what people will remember as the history. So it's quite,
I noticed that more and more dramatizations now of a disclaimer at the beginning saying it's based on real life events, but some of the dialogue has
people don't know which one. So it's an excellent propaganda program run by Hollywood on a lot of history, and people should be aware that. And the masses receive this and they watch this, people who aren't tuned into politics, people who aren't interested in history, they consume this entertainment. And this is how they believe history will have happened. So Hollywood can rewrite history across the globe through films like this. And nobody will even realize that history has been altered because people just remember what they've seen dramatized in these propaganda pieces.
Now, I mentioned would the film be directed by a big name New Zealand director such as Peter Jackson, but the leak script has been written by a New Zealand-born screenwriter, Andrew Niccol, who's most known for writing the Truman Show movie, Gattaca, and Lords of War.
Yes, well, as I noted before, one of the producers was connected to a high-profile climate cult journalist, and as you said, the writer is well-known. So up to this point, some very well-known Kiwi names have been attached to this movie, and very left-wing names, and so we'll see.
Has she broken her silence about she's going to be just her?
No, so I think they're going to hope that this blows over. I don't think they were expecting the script leak. It's just complete radio silence now. Once the news cycle moves on, I suspect they will make this. I really do believe they want this because it's an excellent propaganda piece.
We're making great time. We're 3/4 of the way through the show. We've summarized the last 2 weeks in succinctly. You and I are both economics watchers, and although it seems that, particularly the Australian economy bouncing back well. Josh Frydenberg, our federal treasurer, uses all these buzzwords. He announced this week that unemployment had the official unemployment rate had fallen below 5%, 4.9%, but this was before the Sydney lockdown started and all the other rolling lockdowns began again. And of course, that's just that's the people who are basically full time unemployed. Doesn't count people who are part time and want to work more. The underemployed, we still have interest rates ridiculously low at 0.1%, and there's more and more economic commentary that they can't stay that long forever. Inflation
is and billions of dollars printed obviously has some inflationary effect. But before I go into those details, I should remind people as well, last 15 minutes of the show, feel free to drop your questions in the chat. Tim has put the link to the Entropy in the chat as well, if you want to leave a super chat there. You could leave a hyper chat on Odyssey. I have seen that I think the live stream is not actually working on Odyssey at the moment. So there may be something broken
there. If you do... I just realized that I forgot to do it. That's my bad this way.
That's Tim's fault. I'm sorry. I could have mentioned that earlier. So we didn't have an Odyssey live stream today. I did see that those who were waiting there did jump across to the YouTube, so that's all right. Technical difficulties happen. If you left the hyper chat there.
Click the button, that's all. It wasn't a technical issue.
All right.
Because we did schedule the episode quite late, so.
We were running late indeed, and that was the case, so.
We can
still take hyper chats. We can still take super chat. We can still answer your questions. So the big news today and on the economic front in New Zealand was that inflation has soared to 3.3%. And this is above the target set by the Reserve Bank, which is between 1% and 3% inflation, which means that the government steals 1-3% of your savings and your income every single year via inflation. And now this is pushed beyond 3% to 3.34 June, so just last month. And they expect this to actually continue in the 2-4% range, probably for the year. America's numbers have been announced to be above 5%. And these are real effects from the $1 billion money printing operations that the New Zealand government has been running and the $1 trillion printing that the United States government has been doing. Cost of building houses has gone up 7.4% for the year. So housing inflation is much higher, and that's purely building. House price inflation, I will get to in a minute. Petrol has increased 16%, the average price is nearly at $2.30. in New Zealand. Our mortgage rates are also starting to be pushed up as well. So we're going to be seeing, even though the official cash rate hasn't gone up, we're going to see mortgage rates climb as well. We see the house prices the chart that Tim's put up there is from the last nearly 20 years, actually for the last 20 years. Red is when Labour was in power, blue is when National was in power. And the house price inflation would usually be at about $20,000 to $40,000 a year, which is good money if you own a house. But under Labor, since 2019 and especially 2020 and 2021, we have seen increases of over $100,000 average every single year. So that means your house, sitting in your house, and this is good. This is great news for Amy. My wife is very, very happy. She gets to sit in the house and earn $500 a day by just sitting in the house. So, great stuff if you own a house, but it does mean that we are seeing the rise of a feudal New Zealand where, the landed elite will stay the landed elite, and those who do not have any ownership stake in land, they're out of luck, right? There's no way you can catch up with that.
And the housing market throughout Australia, particularly in southeast Queensland, on the Gold Coast and regional areas, is skyrocketing. Even house prices in Melbourne continue to go up. And when there is more money printing, inflation goes straight to the property price. So it eventually does manifest itself in increases to regular consumer products. I mean, I have a addiction to energy drinks, and one of my favorites is Mother, because it's cheap. It used to be, about $6.20 at the supermarkets. It just went up to $12.
Yeah, and we can see that for grocery.
It's owned by the Coca-Cola company, so it is part of what I call their CPI Coca-Cola price index.
And we've got prices going up across the board, and usually this season, you know, vegetables go up as well, but they've been going up across the board for more. So you're paying more money for especially fresh produce. These are the things that are going to be hitting families the hardest, and it's essentially theft or, you know, the currency debasement is a form of taxation, which is, but sadly baked into the system, right? The Reserve Bank targets inflation to be 1-3%. They target to steal your savings and to steal your income. Unemployment rate is about as low as yours, below 5% now, which is, you know, good, perhaps good news. But I suspect as well those numbers are fudged in terms of people being underemployed. So they're working, part-time hours, and they're counted as employed.
And of course, not perfect storm, but a storm of destructive proportions is when you get stagflation, which is both rising inflation and rising unemployment, because when inflation goes up, wage demands
increase well, yeah.
Cost of living, and that increases labor costs as well. I've commented this before, but the way that this decade is, the 2020s is setting up, is very similar to the stagflation, economic and human disasters of the 1970s, mm-hmm. which was a dark time for humanity all around the world. Totalitarian despots took over in Vietnam. There was the Cultural Revolution, the Ayatollah in Iran. There was mass famine in India and Bangladesh.
We are certainly shaping up for a very interesting decade. History does not necessarily repeat itself, but we see similar patterns manifest themselves. And it's sad to see. Sad to see these people fall for the same tricks every time. And we have the same type of, it doesn't matter whether it's national or labor, we end up with a neoliberal, the neoliberal governments, and the same asset inflation, the same currency inflation every single time. And it's just, it's sad to watch. But if you know the signs, if you know what's going on, you can avoid the worst of the pain. And I saw you put a comment up there about Bitcoin as well. I recommend Bitcoin to everybody when I get the opportunity. So I've had a few people thank me now recently, actually. I gave them a little tip saying, hey, now's a good time to get into Bitcoin. And they did, and they're very, very happy they did so. But certainly that's, you want your money in things that are going to last. Make sure you have some land. That's probably far more important. Make sure you've got some physical goods that are going to be useful no matter what, and if you've got spare cash, put it into something that's deflationary rather than inflationary, especially Bitcoin.
Since we are making such a great time, we might wrap it up early for tonight. Not that I've got anywhere to go.
That's right, go out and party, Tim. It's I'm happy to answer a few more Bitcoin questions, and it's been very busy weeks for me. So, like, for instance, especially like work has been very, very busy. We've got school holidays at the moment, so spending lots of time with the kids, trying to spend lots of time with the kids and trying to work too much. get that balance right. But certainly things are very, very busy. So I'm enjoying the chat, and I'll answer that question about Bitcoin, asking Bitcoin, how does it work? What is it? Bitcoin is it's a cryptocurrency that is, I'm trying to think of the 60-second version I can run. Basically, you've got a public ledger, and transactions are verified in a decentralized manner via computing power. So people run calculations to unlock the next block, and to get the reward from the block. It's called Bitcoin mining. And they, while they do this, they also verify transactions. So when people transfer Bitcoin from one address to another address, these transactions get verified independently. They're compared, and they are stored on the ledger, the public Bitcoin ledger. So and of course, there's a fixed amount, fixed supply, and 21 million Bitcoin in total that will be mined. And ultimately, it allows you to transfer wealth anywhere around the globe with near instant, very quick settlement time. So if you want to transfer money from New Zealand to, say, somewhere in Asia, you could be looking at multiple day transaction times. It can be very, very difficult to transfer money over there. If you want to transfer Bitcoin from New Zealand to Asia, you can do so almost instantly. There are advanced applications built on Bitcoin as well, where people can transfer money in a very, very cheap way, which is why you see countries like El Salvador adopt Bitcoin, because either these are countries that struggle with inflation, or they don't have their own currencies. And, it basically is an excellent way to save money simply because it is deflationary.
A lot of people in the comments discussing it's basically the end times in South Africa with you could call them the BLM riots, burn, loot, murder. They've had the imprisonment of their former president Jacob Zuma, which it just seems to it's. Like, obviously, there was some protests, but it's now just descended into widespread rioting and looting. Businesses being destroyed that will never recover. And that's we're seeing the end times of Rainbow Nation, so-called Rainbow Nation.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't come across any South Africans who believe that the country will recover. Of course, many of them live here in South and East Auckland. And I found a lot recently, especially non-white South Africans living here. So Black Africans, Indians who have lived in Africa for 200 years. Many of these families are moving here to New Zealand. It's tragic to talk to them about what's happened and to that country, and we see, especially those who have seen clips from South Africa recently, a lot more. Obviously, now these ethnically Indian communities are being targeted, and this is what's happened when you've had large parts of the population promised that they're going to get free stuff, and then their leaders have been enriching themselves, and tribalistic breakdown, societal breakdown ensues. The pandemic's been the plandemic has been a perfect excuse for that, where a lot of the lockdowns have destroyed, have wrecked economic havoc and devastation on South Africa too. And then it's the entire place has gone into full meltdown mode.
And we should specify, people often think that you're of South African descent because of your surname, but your family comes directly from Holland.
Yeah, that's right. No South African in me. You've never been to South Africa, but I actually have a lot of South African friends. My best friend growing up, or one of my best friends growing up, was South African. Some of my son's friends now, he's going to school, a lot of the kids in his class are South African too. So got a lot of connections that way, but only connections from within New Zealand.
We have a large South African, what is it, diaspora in Perth in Western Australia, given that it is, well, it's the closest geographically to South Africa. It eventually filtered its way into the mainstream media, the white farm murders, horrific white farm murders, which continue to go on there. They're absolutely abhorrent. It was brought to people's attention thanks to, Lauren Southern's Farmlands documentary. Also, Katie Hopkins, she visited South Africa as well. The stories were told. There was a few rallies here in Australia in rescuing some white South African farmers to bring them to Australia. The federal government didn't do so. The warning signs have been there. It's been beamed in that these people are in danger. But yeah.
Many of them don't necessarily want to go as well. I mean, this is for a lot of these people, this has been their home for many generations. Even the Indians that I've talked to, their families have been there for 150 years. Some of the Dutch immigrants have been there for, 400 years just about now. They don't all want to leave, like moving millions of people out of a country isn't really a solution. Whether or not the Chinese will bring peace and prosperity to Africa, who knows? But this may be a chance for the Chinese empire to assert itself, because certainly the American empire is nearly dead, slightly flailing semi-corpse at the moment.
Origin asks, what's happened to Katie Hopkins? Well, if you follow her on Instagram, she's in Australia at the moment. She's in Sydney hotel quarantine. She managed to, by some miracle, first get a visa into Australia and also get one of the very limited flight places. She's mad to come here given the state of the country, but covering the, as she refers to it, the corona bollocks that has occurred in Australia over the past year, communicating that to her audience. So I assume is down here to do some work with that. I hope that she's not here for the same reason that Caitlyn Jenner has arrived in Australia for Celebrity Big Brother.
Shocking, sad. I was going to say, Katie, I was going to say, the last I saw of Katie Hopkins, I'd had seen some of her stuff on Instagram recently, and she was in America. She'd been touring America for a while, and I didn't realize she had somehow managed to infiltrate Australia, and I'm not sure who accidentally signed off on her entry visa in the Department of is it Internal Affairs or Foreign Affairs? Home Affairs is the one. Last time somebody got banned, and I'm trying to remember who tried to come last time they couldn't make
both it. Both Evan McGuinness and Miley Yiannopoulos got banned.
Yeah. So she's not famous enough to get banned. Mm-hmm.
Well, she was famous enough to get banned off Twitter, famously.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why Caitlyn Jenner has come down here. Colin has just decided to dead name her, given that she's supposed to be running a recall at California election. I mean, we've got time to, what is it, come to Australia. Like the recall election's in, September sometime?
Mm-hmm. He's not winning anything. Don't worry. Republicans are not that. They've tried to gaslight the Republican base, but they're not having any of it. So
Tommy Lahren said she was disgusted at Republicans' transphobic comments at Caitlyn Jenner.
That's right. If you're against Tommy Lahren, you're on the right side.
All right, we did make it to 7 o'clock.
We survived.
Timed an hour. Thank you to everyone in the live chats. Next week, Trad Tasman Talk, same time, but with myself and Stephen Berry. He's experiencing his sixth lockdown now because he got to live the four ones in Auckland and the two last ones in Melbourne.
Excellent stuff. So I've got the Right Minds podcast that's happening. We may have an episode next week sometime, not sure. It's happening intermittently, but we did have an episode recently on blasphemy laws and the transformation of New Zealand into an ethno state. So it's a good episode. Check it out on the Right Minds NZ YouTube channel or Odyssey channel. If you go to rightminds.nz, I believe it's the most recent article on there. I'm still intermittently writing, but like I said 15 minutes ago, I'm just very, very busy at the moment. We do have a show on the Right Minds channel on Mondays, hosted by Tare Purere, and he discusses the week's events and news in New Zealand, especially around legislation that's being discussed and passed. So it's a good good show. I've got a question, last question here from, I did see a question here from Origin asking about the court case. No big updates there. We're still, we have a date for the next phase of discovery in August. So until then, we're still trying to get a bunch of unredacted information. So we've got information that we want to proceed with the court case, but we want to get it, get the stuff. Of course, the stuff that they redacted is the stuff that we want. So we're going to try and get that next. Hopefully we have some good progress on that next month.
And you'll keep us updated in that regard anyway. And you can keep up with the latest Unshackled productions and our publications by visiting theunshackled.net. I'll be back on Monday for another Tim's News Explosion, which will be the day four of the day five, well, so-called day five circuit breaker lockdown. We'll see where things are at there. And then, of course, Wilmsfront again next Thursday evening, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time, and new reports from Tiger Mount with Richard Borsoncroft will come out soon as well.
Excellent. And that's it from us. So good night, and we will see you all in a few weeks.
And I'll see you, well, on this show next week. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk. To keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackles.net and rightminds.nz.